Our next guest had a dilemma on his hands a few years back. A blind lamb was born on his farm, he and his wife's farm, and what he and his wife decided to do with that lamb is the basis for a new children's book. Larry Mueller here in the studio with me today, Jim Thompson. He is the author of the book Peanut of Blind Faith Farm. And we're going to talk about why he wrote the book, what happened to Peanut, talk about sheep and shearing a little bit perhaps too. Maybe you've been in a situation like Jim's, maybe not with a lamb, maybe with another animal. What did you do? Have you thought about writing a children's book? That's another thing we can talk about. Love to hear from you. Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Jim Thompson worked with the DNR for 20 years, wasn't it, Jim? And welcome, by the way.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you worked at the DNR, but then retired, and you always wanted a farm, I guess.
Well, I did work for...
Ah! Well, we just had a new first on the show. The microphone came off, and so we're going to fix it. Tell you what, why don't we have this?
I can just hold it.
Yeah, you can just hold it, or we can. Why don't we just move you over to another one,
right.
And I'll turn that one on and turn that one off. This is a new first, folks. A microphone fell off its stand, and suddenly, Jim had no microphone in front of him. So that has, and I've been doing this show for like 50 years, and it's the first time anything like that ever happened. So well, I'm sorry for that.
That's okay. Glad to be part of a first.
Oh, man. Well, have you always wanted a farm? Is that...
Well, after 20 years with DNR and retirement, my wife was born and raised on a farm in her south of Madison in Broadhead, and she had always expressed an interest in perhaps living a little bit closer to her workstation and maybe living on a hobby farm. That was her. She was very kind of a dream of hers to live out in the country and away from suburbia. So upon retirement, we started to look. 21 hobby farms later.
Oh my goodness!
In our looking, because it's an interesting experience looking for the right piece of property, we found our home in Jefferson County, and that was the next chapter of the story right there.
And you at some point decided, well, maybe we should have some sheep for shearing?
Yes and no. Actually, what sort of evolved was I looked around after we cleared a lot of box elder and brush and sort of undesirable stuff, and the property started to look a little better. I realized I probably don't want to sit on the John Deere lawn tractor quite this long all day mowing grass. And a neighbor of ours up the road had a sheep ranch, and so my wife and I were talking about, well, what if we had a few sheep? We had some pastures already ready to go. My son Michael helped me build a third. So we did a little research, a little exploration. I stopped in at the neighbors, talked to them. One thing led to another, and we ended up with our first handful of ewes. Females. Yeah.
So you had a half a dozen, right?
I think. Yeah, so. We started out with five. We acquired another one, so we had about a half dozen, and they started to do their jobs. I call them pets with a purpose. Mm-hmm. They started to do their jobs immediately. Started trimming things just marvelously. So to that point, everything was really great.
And then you bought a. Why did you buy a ram?
I think my wife probably asked me that question 100 times, maybe. I just thought it would be really cool. Rams look, they're just cool looking.
Yeah,
big old set of headgear, and they get big and burly. And I thought, well, why not? You know, let's just have a ram. And so we got a ram. and it's not good to purchase or to get sheep one at a time. So we got a buddy, a neutered ram, which is called a Weathers, as his pal, and we kept them segregated from the ewes because we purchased, got him later in the year, in the fall, and that's getting close to breeding season. So we didn't, at that point, we didn't want any part of that lambing right yet. We weren't quite educated enough on being shepherds or keeping sheep. So we kept the ram separate for several months until we were advised, you're safe now. It was March, April, spring. You're good. So I let him commingle. Well, fast forward a little bit, and I learned that naive ewe sheep will often come into what's called spontaneous estrus. In other words, they'll come into heat out of season at the very sight of a good-looking ram that they've never seen before. So nobody told me that. So he did what came natural to him, and in June, when our shearer was at the property to shear our sheep, he sort of looked at me and said, "So you're going to have some late lambs, huh?" And I and sheep, when they're fully wooled, they're big, their wool is thick, and it's really hard to tell that they're carrying. And I said, "No, our ram didn't get commingled until spring." He said, "Well, the one I'm holding now is pregnant. The one I just sheared is pregnant." And he looked into a couple slices. Those two look pregnant, too. So a few weeks later, it started. And within about 8 or 9 days, we had 9 newborns on the property.
Well, it's a good thing you had the shearer there first.
Well, you're spot on, Larry, because without his heads up, we wouldn't have had the chance to sort of cram for what lambing all entails and make sure that we're good stewards of our flock. So that gave us about a month and a half to get ready.
Yeah, I've been to lambing season at Ray Antonovich's farm.
Okay,
a good guy, and so I've watched sheep being born. We didn't have sheep on our farm, so we had, I think, just pretty much everything but.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Well, you had, so you had how many? You had 8 more?
Nine.
Suddenly, you've had doubled our
flock. Yep, there we were.
So let's get to Peanut then.
Well, after 2 or 3 of the initial lambs were born, I came out one morning, and one of the ewes that we knew was pregnant, she was standing by a very, very newborn, probably within 5 or 10 minutes of her birth. And she was really tiny, exceptionally tiny, much smaller than the other lambs that had been born to that point. She was still wet, but she was on her feet, and Mom was doing her job, getting her cleaned off. But I could tell something wasn't quite right. Lambs are really precocious. They're usually up and around and jumping and exploring their environment. And she wasn't. She was really quiet and stayed close to Mom. Seemed quite afraid and was. But her head is what drew my attention. She was cocking her head every which way, bobbing up and down, keeping her nose in the air. And it seemed clear to me that she was really trying to get a handle on what was going on around her. 5 minutes into the world. With her hearing, it seemed like she was trying to listen to what was going on, and certainly smell, rather than see. So I had a suspicion that she may be blind.
And so I imagine you called. I think you called the vet.
We did. We scooped her up and got her in the barn, and her mother was very attentive, very nurturing. And we got her into a stall by herself with her mother. And we had a visit planned for the next day from the vet anyway to check the newborn lambs to date. So when he got there the next day, he confirmed. He said, "Oh yeah, she's completely blind." He didn't have any advice for us other than you're really in for a challenge here. I've never heard of anybody raising a totally blind lamb. We had a decision to make, and
Do you put this animal down, or do you try
Yeah. Yeah, that was the decision. And my wife is just she's just a wonderful steward of animals. We both have strong animal backgrounds, but she's just exceptionally dialed into that world. And she had already named the lamb because she's a small brown little brown thing with a little white halo on top of her head. And she said, we're going to name her Peanut, and she's going to be just fine. We just need to give her a little help.
Wow. And you sheep, your sheep are for wool. Did that influence your decision at all, or was it just from the heart?
Certainly with Peanut, from the heart. My wife Laura is an avid knitter, and she's learning to spin. And later on, she got into the world of actually showing her fleeces at shows and competitions. So she was already a knitter, and we already had plans to use our fleeces for fiber arts. But Peanut's Peanut's arrival changed things into a whole new arena of caring for an animal with a disability.
Wow. We are talking today with Jim Thompson. Jim is the author of Peanut of Blind Faith Farm. It's illustrated by Rebecca Gavney Driscoll, who is also a Wisconsin person, and it's published in Wisconsin as well, which I think is really cool. So we got a Wisconsin author, a Wisconsin illustrator, and a Wisconsin press. It's Little Creek Press and Book Design from Mineral Point, Wisconsin. And we're going to continue the story and talk about the book and a whole lot more relating to sheep right after we take a look at the news. You stay with us. So happy you're with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, talking now to the author of a children's book that is based on the true story of a blind sheep. Our Wisconsin author, Jim Thompson, retired from the Wisconsin DNR. He and his wife have a hobby farm in Jefferson County. They raise sheep for wool, and he's just written his first book, Peanut of Blind Faith Farm. You may have a hobby farm. What's that experience been like for you? Maybe you raise sheep, or maybe you have questions about sheep. Certainly, you may have questions about writing or about the story itself. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You may have had to face a decision like Jim and his wife had to do. Do we let this blind lamb live and try and work it out? Or there's the other alternative. And they chose to let the lamb live. And the book is kind of the story of the life of Peanut and the life of Jim and his wife in relation to Peanut. Join in with your own recollections, stories, or questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post a note on our Facebook page, maybe even a photo if you got a sheep photo. I'd love to see that too. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post right there as not only photos, but your questions as well. So when we kind of broke for news, we were talking about, okay, the Peanut's just born, and there had to be problems. Well, I know there were problems, but I read your book, your children's book, raising her.
Well, it certainly were, and they we got a baptism of fire. It kind of started out right from the get-go. Her second full day of her being with her mom in her stall, we noticed that Peanut hadn't lain down yet. She'd nursed, so that was good. Mom made sure that happened, and Laura and I noticed that she was wobbly and stumbling around, and she didn't appear sick. Other than her apparent lack of vision, confirmed the next day by the vet. But she did not understand that it was time to take a nap, lay down.
And had never seen it done.
So standing in nursing and standing and letting her mom clean her was her normal at that point. So Laura wondered aloud, hey, maybe lambs get a little clue about laying down from watching, seeing their mothers and the other sheep. So she went into the stall, and as it depicts in the book, sheep lay down just like deer do. They fold their front legs and then their hind legs. So Laura went through that protocol, folded her front legs and back legs, and the first couple times she didn't appreciate that too much. But I think on the third try, Laura got her into a really comfortable position in the straw, and that was it.
She clunked right out,
and she slept for a very long time. And after that, that was it. She had it. So that was the beginning of things that we couldn't take for granted that she knew how to do anything, really.
Yeah. Well, let's take some calls. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments. Don in Exonia up now. Hi, Don. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you, Larry. Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Good, Don. How are you?
Oh, good. I just wanted to call in as the neighbor who provided you for Jim and said how wonderful this is to have a neighbor that, you know, has taken care of a blind lamb like that, wrote a book. It's wonderful, I think. So I just wanted to call in to say hi and how much I have enjoyed Jim's book.
Thanks, Don. We appreciate your help and your mentoring. It's meant a great deal to Laura and myself. So thanks a lot. It all started with you guys.
There you go. And I imagine Don and his family helped out a lot in terms of just learning.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's a lot more to know than, I mean, it's just not putting them in a pen and...
No, and Kate and Don Gables, they provided excellent mentoring, and especially when you're dealing with lambing for the first time, there's just so many questions, so many things. So we've been fortunate to have great resources at our disposal.
And one other, we can talk about a lot of things, but I know one of the early problems was some headbutting that went on.
Yes, sheep communicate physically with a headbutt. They do a great many things with a headbutt. Rams use it as a kind of a show of who's boss, who's stronger, who's dominant. Lambs use it as a gesture to acknowledge one another, to play, push each other around. So it takes very many forms. Unfortunately, there were a few sheep that took it upon themselves. They just, the normal sort of pecking order type thing that happens with animals across the board. They were pretty brutal or pretty severe on Peanut when she was finally turned loose out into pastures, and so we had to take some steps to sort of segregate the flocks into a Peanut-friendly group and an other group. And after that, it's been great.
That's really something. So the rest of the flock responded. Some responded well, some didn't, and you just separated them out, and things went from there. Have you do you still keep them separate, or do you?
Yes, we decided that flocks bond, individual sheep within a flock bond very closely with one another.
Okay.
So once you sort of have established a flock, now newborns become integrated, and that's part of the normal process. But when we made two separate flocks, we that was pretty much a permanent decision. She has her own flock, and she knows her flock mates very well. They know her, and it all is in pretty good harmony, except when now Peanuts. now she's flexing her muscles, and it certainly isn't shy about when she feels like it's time to do a little head button of her own. Every now and then she swings and misses.
Well, listen, you what prompted you to write a children's book about Peanut? Let's talk about the book.
Sure, thanks. Thanks for asking that. It's been a kind of a journey. About a year and a half into her being with us, I just thought it was just developing into just a cool story, watching her adapt and overcome all these hurdles and visitors to the farm. And I thought, well, I'm just going to write this story up and see if anybody's interested. So I did. I wrote it in sort of popular layman's terms, adult to adult. And there's a trade magazine called Sheep. Go figure, Sheep Magazine, and it's a nationwide publication that caters to the sheep and wool industry. And I called the editor and asked him if he might be interested in one thing led to another. I sent him the manuscript, and they published it. And it was a pretty extensive article, about 3 pages with pictures. And after that article was published, including the story of the ram and all of my blunders and along those lines, he said, you know, this would make a great children's book. Why don't you think about doing that? At that point, Peanut was a couple of years old. And so I thought, well, all right. I thought about it, talked to some friends, certainly talked it over with Laura, and there was really no good reason not to, other than had I know the amount of work, which is fine. It was a labor of love, but boy, quite an undertaking.
Yeah, and it's talk about that whole process. Did you take classes, or did you just kind of...
No,
read other children's books?
Certainly did that. Oh, my. Especially, you like anything else, you do your research. And so spent a lot of time at the library reading children's books. Tried to find children's books written about disabled animals. And lo and behold, there have been very, very few children's books written about especially happy stories like Peanuts is. About disabled animals that have overcome. So it's very important to be in a genre where there's not so much competition for material. Children's books are very competitive. Tremendous amount of research in reading a lot of children's books, not to copy styles necessarily, but just sort of the format So lots and lot of drafting, a lot of critiquing with writers groups on the internet and personally, back and forth, and submitting to editors. Just a really comprehensive process.
And Rebecca Driscoll, Rebecca Gavney Driscoll, is the artist. How did you find her?
Well, Becky Driscoll is just tremendous. I spent several days researching artist portfolios, looking for someone who could really kind of nail animals. And lo and behold, that's her specialty. She's a Wisconsin artist.
Good artist, too.
Just tremendous artist. So when I looked at her portfolio, I contacted her, told her about the story, sent her the manuscript, and she kind of fell in love with it right from day one. And she said, I'd love to do it. And fortunately, our publisher had previous experience with Becky as an illustrator, and so it was just sort of, it all gelled at once. They were thrilled to hear that I really wanted Becky to illustrate the book.
It's wonderful, and I think it's really cool that it's all Wisconsin, too.
And a printer, so we have a foursome. We have illustrator, author, publisher, and printer, so quadfecta, I guess, of Wisconsin.
Let's see. Chris on Facebook says she had a series of disabled pets, and that for the right person, it can be very rewarding.
Truer words than ever spoken. Tremendously rewarding. Yes, it's really something to watch. These little creatures that just at the outset have no. You really wonder whether they're going to be able to handle all the stuff that's going to come their way, and to watch them figure it out one step at a time.
You know, that watching them figure it out, I think, is kind of important. There were some things you had to do. You had to separate Peanut.
Right.
You had to do that.
Right.
But when it came to eating, you know, sheep are competitive. And talk about that.
Nursing, of course, that's instinctive, but mom still had to steer her to the milk supply, because again, whether or not there's an eye recognition, a sight recognition of mom's milk supply or not, but mom did a good job of steering her, and so the nursing part went well. And when they were turned out to pasture, we were very interested into whether or not she'd understand that, okay, now it's time to start eating a little grass. And mm-hmm. and so we spent a lot of time following her around, and it was she got it. And so there's probably a lot of hardwiring in that part of things. So she learned how to find her grasses. She learned how to be picky, just like the rest of the flock. So there weren't any issues in terms of that. Water was another story. Sheep evolve sort of as desert animals, so they don't need a whole lot of water, especially when they're eating grass, but they do need free water. And sheep find their water by looking for the water supply. So we kind of came up with the idea to put their water on fence lines. And so Peanut actually figured out that if she just wandering around to a great big pasture looking for a water supply, that's pretty frustrating. So she figured out that if she put her shoulder against the fence and walked along it with the fence to one side, eventually she's going to run in headlong
into some water,
into a water pail. And that's exactly what happened. And she, on the first go around it, she knocked one over and splashed her, drenched her, and that was it. Okay, that's the deal. Just walk around, feel an offense, you're going to hit water. And from that point on, that was her MO. That's how she figured
it
out.
And let her figure it out on her own.
That's right. That was really important for us, because you just can't be there 24/7, 365. At some point, they've got to fend for themselves. But certainly watching her at the initial stages so that she would find water. Because if she wouldn't have, then we would have had to figure out some way.
Yeah.
So that was her water experience.
Colleen in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Colleen.
Hi. I just wanted to tell the author, thank you so much for writing this. There's some eerie parallels. I grew up on a Shetland sheep hobby farm. My mom wasn't a knitter, but she was a weaver.
Oh, great.
Yeah, really great. We're going to buy multiple copies of this book for our family. But I just want to say thank you for writing this, especially, you know, we've had animals with various difficulties over the years. And I think it was amazing. Consistently, we learned as farmers that it wasn't them that needed to change; it was us.
That's right.
So thank you so much for writing this book.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. Thank
Colleen,
you very much.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Paul in Algoma, let's go to you next. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon, Larry and Jim. This is Paul Smith. I knew Jim for many years when he worked for the DNR. And
hi, Paul.
Yeah, how are you, Jim?
I'm good. You're not going to ask me about salmon today, I bet.
I was on a stream. They're doing electroshocking, looking for natural reproduction of trout and salmon, something near and dear to your
you
heart
bet.
In the past days. But I was just calling in. It's great to hear your voice, Jim. And for years, I read your fisheries reports and never realized you might have a creative bone in your body. And so I'm going to go out. The book sounds tremendous. I congratulate you on your
Thank
life
you.
After retirement. It sounds enriching and great, and I'm going to have to buy the book and read it.
Thank you very much, Paul. Great to hear your voice, too, and thanks for all your help over the years.
And, Paul, I've got to tell you, as an adult, I thought, well, okay, let me just take a look at this book. I'll, you know, Jill, my producer, said, yeah, you want to take a look at this book? I started reading the book, and I really enjoyed it as an adult. I thought, well, it's kind of for children, but it works for me, too. So thanks.
I really enjoyed the description of it. And truthfully, Jim has always had a great sense of humor, and I know him to be a man of high intelligence. And so I really look forward to reading it.
Thanks,
you.
Paul.
Thank you very much, Paul. This is you know, it's a really interesting book, and I'm sure there have other listeners who have entertained the idea of writing a children's book. Have you got a little piece of advice for them before we take other calls?
Sure, I think probably a couple of things jump out immediately, and one of which I was very, very poor at, which is to have patience, because the critiquing process, your first go around is not going to be anywhere close to the finished product. It's not even going to be remotely close. So be patient with the folks that are going to critique your work. Secondly, you've got to be very diligent and not give up. And rejection is simply a part of writing and a part of publishing. And to listen and understand the good comments that come from the professionals in writing, whether it's children's books or any other genre, that they're professionals, and pay attention to what they say and be persistent. Keep going. Don't give up on it.
And listen to what they say on the negative side too, because you definitely learn from that.
Oh, absolutely. Some of the most important changes in the manuscript were made after sort of a eureka moment by someone else, or sometimes Laura, our family member, said, "Hey, you know, boom," and it ended up in the final.
And the light bulb went out.
Exactly. Yeah.
Terry and Hammond, your turn. Hi, Terry. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. We just had a blind little white Highlander bull born.
Oh, my.
He'll be about a month old.
Okay.
And the longest thing it took was for him to find which end to go after his meal. And the mother didn't clean for like 5 days, and I was getting kind of worried. But then I told my husband, I decided, you know, it's probably a good thing she didn't clean, because that's how he found her.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, you bet. Well, but he figured it out.
Yes, oh, yes, he did.
Thank you, Terry.
Thanks a lot, Terry.
Thanks a lot for calling. And, you know, smell, apparently, you know, it was kind of a little eye-opening, I guess, in a way. But smell plays a huge role, and every one of those animals smells a little different, don't they?
Oh, that's exactly right. And there's a little bit of science behind animals who are deprived of one sense, their other senses being heightened. So certainly in Peanut's case, her ears never stop moving. She spends a lot of time with her nose in the air, but when she's interacting with other sheep, it's interesting to watch her approach sheep downwind, so that she can get a sniff first, because a couple of the sheep are getting older and they may not appreciate it, you know, a headbutt at that moment, and she knows who those are. So she certainly identifies her flock mates by scent. You bet.
Now, are you doing any readings or going out to visit around to sell the book?
We are. We've got a busy remainder of the summer. The book was released on June 2nd, and we've kind of hit the ground running with readings and author events in a variety of places, including later this evening at Books and Company in Oconomowoc. So we have been doing active promotion, you bet.
And do you have is there a website or a place where people can go to learn a little bit more?
Yes, please. It's all one word, pretty easy, blindfaithfarm.com. So if you just go to blindfaithfarm.com, it's not only our website, the farm's website, it's Peanut's website, and the book is prominently displayed on the website, click and go, so it's pretty simple. If you want to purchase the book or just learn a little bit more about Peanut or sheep, it's all there on blindfaithfarm.com.
Blindfaithfarm.com, and the name for the farm came before Peanut.
No, actually,
no?
It was after, and Laura...
had that idea.
That was her idea.
Yeah. Oh, well, listen, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much, Jim, for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Larry. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Jim Thompson, author of Peanut of Blind Faith Farm. Great talking with him, and thank you for listening. Please stay with us.